Hello and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Extra Movie Butter boys are diligent in our effort to be able to bring you our review of the most recent movie release. Of course, we're going to break down a little bit of movie news and some box office totals for you. But then let's be honest, the real reason why you stick around is for our second segment. And that's where we all love to just throw a little bit of Extra Movie Butter on your going experience and just give our own personal reviews. This week, we're going to be reviewing The Exorcist, The Believer, which took number one at the box office this weekend with a solid $26 million debut. Paw Patrol, pretty solid numbers for week two, coming in at number two in the box office with $11.3 million. Saw X, Saw 10, whatever you want to call it. Saw X, Saw itself, making 7.7 and coming in third place. The Creator, bumped down, not by much, $6.2 million in its second week, coming in at fourth place. Not a bad second week for it. The Blind, still making a little bit of money, $3.2 million, coming in at number five. A Haunting in Venice, $2.6 million, took the sixth spot. The Nun 2 dropped to seventh place with $2.6 million. Eight is Dumb Money with $2.1 million. Nine, The Equalizer 3, $1.8 million. And a little bit of a surprise, Hocus Pocus. Yes, the Disney re-released Hocus Pocus came in 10th place with $1.6 million. You know what's absent from the top 10?
Expendables.
Hocus Pocus beat the Expendables out of the top 10.
I wouldn't mind, appreciate that. I wouldn't mind seeing that crossover. Stallone and Statham have to go take out the witches. I'm on board. I'm there day one.
I'm still putting my money on Bette Midler to win that fight. But Stallone,
gentlemen, does look a lot like Kathy and Jimmy these days, so it makes sense.
Gentlemen, you've heard the tale of the box office. What does it tell you?
Go ahead, Benny. I can't wait to hear your thoughts.
My thoughts are pretty simple. Like, humanity decided that it wasn't interested in the Creator at all. they decided that week one. They reaffirmed that opinion week two. Horror movies continue to do well, especially their first week. If they're good, they hold okay. If they don't, they have a big drop off. But what it's pretty consistent that between 18 million and 25 million worth of people will show up right now if you put a horror movie out, especially Halloween time. They're just going to show up in droves. And Paw Patrol, man, parents with preschool kids like to leave the house too. And they still wanted to get out of the house, and they did. So good job, Paw Patrol. My kid went and seen it. He said it's excellent. He gave it a two thumbs up. So if you have a little kid, there you go.
All right. Interesting. Yeah, you know what? A lot of people obviously. So here's the thing. I was reading a lot of the movie news this weekend. Exorcist Believer, the rights, in order for them to get the rights for the Exorcist franchise, they paid $400 million. Mm-hmm. And this film is the first of what's supposed to be a trilogy. I think some of that was depending on box office. Now, this movie only cost around $30 million. So in its opening weekend, it basically made back its budget, not counting advertising and everything. And I think because it is October and Halloween, it's going to have a little bit more legs than if you released it in March or January. So I think it's going to do okay. I also think it's doing decent overseas. So I think this movie's just barely going to pull a profit. And I think they have to make those sequels, or at least the next one, because of how much money they have invested into this franchise. Not budget-wise, but just getting the rights. Now, I don't know why you're paying $400 million for the Exorcist rights. Mm. This is not Mission Impossible or Fast and Furious. There literally has only been one good movie, The Exorcist. Part two is considered one of the worst sequels ever. It's awful. Part three actually now kind of has a cult following. And I watched it for the first time a couple years ago. And it's not bad. It's not The Exorcist, but it's not bad. It's probably the best sequel up until this point. And then there was those two films that were like origin films. And they fired the director halfway through. And Renny Harlin came in and took over. And basically they made two different movies while making one movie, and you could actually watch both of those on the Blu-ray. It's like two different visions of the same movie. It was just a clusterfuck the whole time. So I don't know why you're paying $400 million for this one franchise when it's really only you're paying for the first film rights, honestly. I mean, and you're going to make some of that back in, like, you know, re-release the new 4K last week. Sure, you'll make a few million there.
They did not get the rights to the original film.
Really? So they only got the sequel? So that means they don't get the rights to the original, but they're able to make new ones, basically.
Yep.
Wow. So I don't know what they're thinking. Like, even if this was an amazing film, it wasn't going to make $400 million. So they really are kind of put in a spot where they probably were really hoping this film was going to make a crap load of money. But at the same time, you're making an R-rated Exorcist film. And I just don't know how much, you know, young people are like hammering for a new Exorcist movie. I think the original film's amazing. I rewatched it this morning. Moose, you said you rewatched it. Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit in segment two. And well, I can't wait to talk about this new film, which I think has got really bad reviews. I think it's at like 28 or 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I'll say right out of the gate before we get into our review, I think that's a little harsh. I don't think the movie is that bad. It's nowhere near The Exorcist, but it is not at a 26, 28% level, in my opinion. So, yeah, they got to make another film. I don't know if David Gordon Green's going to come back. He said in some interviews that he might come back or he might just, you know, help executive produce. But he did write the treatment for the three films. So he's going to be involved in some way. So, yeah, man, Exorcist believer. Not a lot of believers out there, it looks like. But we'll see how it does. I'm curious to see how it does because it is October. We are in the Halloween season. So, yeah, what did you think about it, Moose?
I did not know that Blumhouse paid $400 million for the rights to these spinoffs and or sequels to this movie. That is shocking numbers for this franchise. All the prequels and the sequels to this movie all combined can't add up to $400 million.
I know.
And usually Blumhouse is pretty thrifty and pretty savvy with how they pay for and how they make their movies.
I think he has a deal with, you know, I believe it's Universal. So I don't think he put all the money up. I think Universal, and I'm sure Blumhouse had to put a little bit in, but I think the paycheck is mostly on Universal.
Universal still trying to make that dark universe happen now, this time with The Exorcist in their stable. But that's crazy numbers to pay for something like this. Look, the original Exorcist is one of the greatest horror movies of all time.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree on that. And you hear, you know, some of the behind the scenes stories about, you know, they're just being supernatural, like events that are occurring, people died. So the original Exorcist, like the legacy of it continues to just be, make it kind of one of those like iconic Hollywood movies. Everything after that is not great. And so it's just, it's interesting that they keep putting out these movies and this is kind of a sequel to it. I know that there were some of the original actors, actresses that were part of the original Exorcist that came back and reprised certain roles in these movies or in this movie, excuse me. But aside from this being just kind of a quick cash grab around Halloween, this movie's not going to go down and be remembered as anything special. So if they're planning on launching a whole franchise of these Exorcist movies, you're in a lot of trouble. You need to hire Hugh Grant as Van Helsing and Hugh Jackman as Van Helsing and have him make an appearance in these movies if you're planning on making more than your $30 million opening weekend. So, I mean, it didn't cost much to make, so they'll make their money back on this one, but I think they have a very, very, very long way to go to make back $400 million.
Go ahead.
I just have a lot to say on the movie, but I'm going to save it for the third in our review because there's a lot to talk about. Go ahead, Benny.
Do either of you know offhand, is it next week or when Five Nights at Freddy's comes out?
I believe it's not next week, but the week after.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie has one more week because I think after that, it is just going to cut out any possible legs this movie has.
Yeah, next weekend's Killer Flowers of the Killer Moon.
I don't think it's going to be a huge crossover.
I don't think
the audience.
I think the Exorcist believer is going to get crushed by Taylor Swift this weekend.
Yeah,
that is going to get crushed. And
so
then,
Flowers of the Killer Moon.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think Scorsese is going to crack Taylor Swift or really going to put a dent in The Exorcist. Look, if you want to be scared, people go to scary movies around Halloween time because it's Halloween time. This movie released at the right point. It'll make some money in the month of October. It'll be crushed. It'll fall to second place this weekend. And yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's, that one will do moderately well. But again, that one's going to get crushed by Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is going to own the box office for the next month.
Yeah, but I mean, Killers of the Flower Moon is going to do okay. It's, I mean, it's a 3.5 hour film, so there's only so much money. Yeah, there's only so much money you could actually make. I think this Taylor thing is going to be a 1 weekend flash.
Yeah.
And then after that, it'll be like concert movies. I just don't see it playing like,
no way. It's going to make
like another 100 million the next week.
Yeah. Oh, dude. It'll make 100 million this weekend, but there will be people who are going to be repeat. Taylor Swift is going to be the number one movie through the next 30 days. That's my prediction right now.
Okay.
All right. You heard it, folks. But I do want to give a little props. Hocus Pocus is a guilty Halloween pleasure of mine. That was the movie is fine for what it is, but it has a nostalgia part. And we talk about nostalgia all the time. And so I'm glad to see it making a little money. The second movie was not very, the sequel to it that came out on Disney Plus. Yeah, it was fine. It wasn't anything spectacular. Mm-hmm. And I hear that they've greenlit a third. So we'll get a little bit more of the Sanderson sisters. But nothing else about this box office surprises me.
Yeah, me either.
Well, we're going to move on to a little bit of movie news and some sad news, but not wholly unexpected news. And that is that the announcement came from DC Studios, from Warner Brothers Studios, that none of the both DCEU characters and or actors will be showing back up in the new DC universe. Now, we'll still get the tentpole Batman and we'll still get Superman, will still get the comic book characters, just different versions of them. So not one of them is going to be translating over, which means that Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom is dead on arrival. Regardless of what happens in that movie, whatever post-credit scene occurs in that movie, nothing is going to be connected to any DC movie following this next upcoming flick. However, it is reported that Jason Momoa, may be coming back in this new universe as Lobo. If you don't know him, he's kind of like a galaxy bounty hunter. He's a bit of a badass.
He's like Stone Cold with hair.
Kind of. Yep. So it's a little bittersweet for me because I do like some of the casting of the current DC characters. I really think that we've talked DC before, especially when The Flash came out and Blue Beetle, but I enjoy Henry Cavill as Superman. I enjoyed Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. It's fine. Her character can pass along. They've really kind of misused that character. She went from being kind of their tentpole character to just being wasted in other films. I like Ben Affleck as Batman. I've been on a DCEU rewatch, and I watched Batman versus Superman. I watched Man of Steel. I kind of have been going through them sequentially, and I very much appreciate what Ben Affleck brought to the character of Bruce Wayne. Credit where credit is due. I like Momoa as Aquaman. I think he brings fun to that character, but I would also like, I'm okay with him playing Lobo. He fits the character. Lobo's just kind of this like hairy, you know, buff intergalactic bounty hunter. I could totally see Momoa playing that with all the charisma that he has. So while I'm sad to see some of the characters go, it's time, I think, to recast some of the other ones. JT, how about you? What do you think?
I'm so torn over this news because I do love Jason Momoa as Aquaman. I'm a fan of that first film. And I think he would make a great Lobo. I think I could just picture him as that character. He almost looks like him right now.
Yeah.
But I just hate the fact that this whole DCU thing is getting reset. I have a Blu-ray collection where all my DC movies are in chronological order and connected universe, unconnected. And then I have my MCU, which is all in order as of release. And now I was like, what? I got to take this Zack Snyder era and I have to like put it to the side and I have to start the new DC, which will start with Superman Legacy. I don't know. I just, has there ever been a failure like this in the history of movies. Like, for something to literally start and have all these huge films, and for it to be dead before all the films have even released, and they're going to restart the whole thing. Has it happened before? Betty, you're shaking your head. Has it?
Well, I mean, if you want to count the Dark Universe, it had two major releases and didn't go anywhere.
What were the, well, The Mummy, what was the second one?
Well, the first one, I think, was technically Dracula Untold or Dracula 2000.
Yeah, with Luke Evans.
Yeah, with Luke Evans. That was part of the universe thing?
That was what supposedly kicked it off.
Yeah. Really? And then they tried to retcon it, but it either way, it didn't work out at all.
I mean, at least they barely got out of the park lot with that one. This DC Universe, they were on the highway halfway across the USA, man. They were, I just think it's sad because I do like how different, like you just watched Man of Steel, Batman vs Superman. It feels so unlike the MCU and so different that I liked having that contrast. And I'm worried James Gunn is going to make this new DC feel more of like an MCU. I mean, that's where he's coming from. He's coming from Guardians and MCU. I wasn't a huge fan of The Suicide Squad.
Right.
So, I have hope. He wouldn't have been my first choice to direct a Superman movie because of the way his sense of humor and kind of like the way he goes about telling stories with, I don't know. He doesn't scream, give me James Gunn for Superman. But I'm going to hold out hope. I love the DC characters. I think it's going to be weird seeing Jason Momoa as Lobo. I mean, he'll be great, so I think we'll get over it pretty quick. But it just feels weird to have this whole weird Zack Snyder franchise kind of just thrown to the side. And it's going to be also interesting like 10 years from now when I have all those movies and all the new DCU reset. And I'm curious to see how I feel. But at least we still have the movies. No matter what, they're still there. You still revisit them. I'm still a huge fan of Man of Steel, but it's just weird, man. And there, I don't think there's really been anything like it in film going.
I don't think there's going to be. I'll say I'm not too sad about Jason Momoa moving from Aquaman to Lobo, because I really don't think he's going to play a different character. I think you're pretty much going to get the same character with some body paint and no fish.
It's gonna be weird, though.
It will be weird, but I mean, at this point, like between what the MCU has done recently and what the DCEU has done over the last couple of years, I will take anyone that will make a decent superhero movie.
Yeah,
I don't care what it's being rebooted or what it's going. I'll just take it.
It's just weird because Jason Momoa, the last film of this is Aquaman, and they're saying he might appear as Lobo in Superman Legacy, if not. Then maybe in his own film, but they're saying there's a possibility he will show up in Superman Legacy as Lobo. It's just like to go from Aquaman to that, and this there's no other movies after Aquaman, and the first film is said to be Superman Legacy.
That role won't be huge for him. It'll be like an introductory role, to the character of Lobo. I mean, you've seen the cast of characters. You've got Green Lanterns. You've got old school Flashes. Like, you're going to have a ton of characters that are going to be appearing. And if there's one thing James Gunn loves, it's obscure, like, comic book characters. The Suicide Squad would have been the perfect platform for him to be able to just unleash all these obscure characters. And he kind of did. Look, he gave us like Ratcatcher 2 and the Polka Dot Man.
Yeah.
And they were some of the best characters in the movies. Like, I'm with you, JT. I didn't love the movie. There are like redeeming qualities of it. But that was his platform to be able to bring in these obscure characters. And what does he do? He announces all these totally obscure characters that are going to be in Superman Legacy. So I don't think Lobo is going to be a big character there, but it is going to give us a little bit of like a palate cleanser from Aquaman to Lobo. So we'll at least have that like sip of water before we get the next drink of whiskey and be like, okay, this is our cleanser. This is him as Lobo. This is what we can expect. It's like Benny said, it's Aquaman without the fish and a little bit of body paint and some red eyes.
I'm worried that he's using this. It sounds like he's using the Superman Legacy movie to build the whole world of this new DCU that he's creating. And I'd rather just make a really good Superman movie and not have to worry about building a whole universe in one Superman film. I'm worried about that.
I'm with JTE. Like, I thought one of the cardinal sins of the DCEU is they did one movie and then they were like, okay, let's go right into Justice League without giving you any time to build to it. And he's like, fuck it. I'm not even giving you Man of Steel. I'm going right into the Justice League movie right now. And that does give me a lot of pause. And the way that they're describing it, even the cartoons and things are going to be interconnected in this universe. They are going to get away from that fast. That's going to become just a quagmire. I don't think that they'll stick with that long, to be honest with you.
I don't know if James Gunn is the guy. Like, I like about 50% of what James Gunn puts out. And I don't necessarily know if him and his partner, Peter Safran, are the guys to be able to run DC Studio. I agree 100% with what Benny said in that Zack Snyder could have given us a wholly different type of universe if they would have just given it time, let it breathe, release a movie, release the next movie. But instead, yes, to your point, Benny, they jumped. They had Man of Steel and then immediately went into Batman versus Superman. Cool. You could have done Batman versus Superman, but then you tackled a bunch. It was Batman versus Superman and Wonder Woman and the Dawn of the Justice Society and the death of Superman. Like, it was a major leap from Man of Steel to all of that. And then immediately they decided, okay, we got to change the tone. It needs to be more lighthearted. Okay. Rewrites for the Suicide Squad, or for Suicide Squad, excuse me, take away the D. And then immediately, oh, okay, Justice League, we need to camp it up. It needs to be more fun. So I 100% agree. Like, they rushed that universe. If they would have taken their time, kept it dark, let it breathe a little bit in between movies and not feel like they had to mimic Marvel, the DCEU that we're saying goodbye to could have been something really, really fun.
Dude, they, in the last 20 minutes of Batman v Superman, they shoved in Doomsday in the Death of Superman.
Yep.
That's its own movie. That is not something you tag on to the last 20 minutes of your Batman v Superman movie. That's its own. The Death of Superman should have been its own movie.
Yep.
And it should have been an hour of Superman fighting Doomsday. It should have been the most epic comic book movie ever. Instead, they shoved it in the last 15, 20 minutes of that movie. I was, even though I like those movies, I was just like, what are you doing? Why are you killing Superman in your second? He's had one Superman movie.
Yep. And if you think about the history of comic books, there's probably no more famous comic book than The Death of Superman.
100%.
I mean, the Death of Superman comic book made TV news. It made newspapers. Like, it was a huge, big deal. And it was like, here's 20 minutes of Doomsday and Superman. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Dude, the origin story of how Doomsday came to be is like one of the coolest stories of how a villain is made. It is sci-fi crazy and insane. And I was like, I would love to see that in a movie. But they shoved it in. Yeah, anyway.
So we're just led to believe that Jesse Eisenberg and Michael Shannon had a baby, and that baby was Doomsday. Oh,
God, I'm going to be going, yeah.
Well, next bit of movie news will probably lead to another longer conversation for us, but Ridley Scott. We all know Ridley Scott. We love him. The Martian's one of my favorite movies. He's got a new one coming out called Napoleon. Now, of course, you're telling the story about one of the greatest generals in the history of the world. Call him great, call him a tyrant, call him whatever you want, but strategically, Napoleon will go down as one of the greatest generals in the history of humankind. So Ridley Scott naturally made a movie with Joaquin Phoenix. Now, his first run of this movie, he said, is 4 hours and 10 minutes. Obviously, he's going to have to cut that down. Most movie theaters will be like, yeah, good luck, Ridley. So his run of this movie will be less than 3 hours. However, he is promising us that we will get a 4 hour and 10 minute cut either on physical media or while it's streaming. So we will get a director's cut of the Ridley Scott drama, which will be Napoleon. Now, Ridley's had many releases and he's had many of them re-released with director's cut. Like, personally, I didn't like the theatrical version of Blade Runner, and then I watched the Ridley Scott director's cut of Blade Runner and absolutely loved it. So I figured I'd throw out the topic of director's cuts to you guys and see what you guys think.
Go ahead, Benny.
Like, I'm all for like a director's cut being re-released. Like a lot of times it works better because they add in a lot of stuff. In this particular instance, I'm rather annoyed because he's essentially saying, you're going to pay to go watch a version of this movie that may or may not work. I have the movie. The movie is done. I'm going to try to Frankenstein a shorter version of this movie to give to you in 2 months. That's what he's saying he is doing. And that's really annoying.
Because now, it's a,
yeah, that's exactly what he's saying he's doing.
Yeah, listen, I think just about every director who releases a movie in theaters prefers a longer cut to what's gone in the theater. I think Indiana Jones, I think the first cut was almost 4.5 hours, The Dial of Destiny. So, like, I don't know if he's saying, hey, this is... He's saying there will be a theatrical version, and that might have the best flow. It might, you know, be the best compact way to tell the story. But if you're interested in the more, you know, bells and whistles, I mean, there's probably stuff in that 4 hour cut that probably can be cut because you don't need to know every little thing or every little fact. But for someone who wants all that, they have it. If not, you have theatrical. For me, like, Kingdom of Heaven is the film I always talk about director's cut because the theatrical was like 2 hours and 10 minutes. And then they added like 50 minutes into the director's cut and it changed the film in so many ways, added motivations for characters that was completely cut out. Storylines were completely cut out. And I watched that director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven, and I was like, this is like, could have been nominated for Best Picture. I thought it was that good. And then when the last time I saw a theatrical cut for Kingdom of Heaven, when I was in theaters, when I saw it the opening weekend, I don't think you can even find it on Blu-ray or DVD. I think most of the copies are out there are just of the director's cut. So I think Ridley knows the 4 hour, 10 minute cut is just everything in the kitchen sink thrown in. And yeah, maybe if it's up to him, that's what he would put out there. But that's why, you know, all these directors work with producers. They work with the studio. They got to get it to a more manageable and streamlined version of the story. So I'll wait until I see both cuts and be like, okay, yeah. But I think he's going to be, I mean, I think they're hoping for some Oscars here. You know, I don't think you got Ridley Scott and Joaquin Phoenix in a historical epic with a budget this big. Apple TV, I think, is producing it. They're shooting for Oscar. So they're going to put out the best product they can.
I just think at this point, I don't know why people are pumping the brakes on long movies. They should just be putting out the movie that they think is the movie at this point. Like, Oppenheimer's a long movie. It made money. Yeah. There are movies coming out like that are an hour and 20 minutes, these short horror movies that may not be the best movies, but they're as long as they should be, and they're making money. All you're doing now is just putting out an inferior movie.
Well, I do feel like movies are longer now than they were when I was growing up. I felt like when a movie was over 2 hours growing up, it's like, whoa, oh, what do we got here? Nowadays, if it's not 2 hours, it feels odd. Everything, I mean, Saw just came out. It was 2 hours. Like, I feel like movies are longer than they should be. And I understand because a lot of it goes to streaming. You can watch in the comfort of your home. The Irishman was the last film before Oppenheimer, 3.5 hours. But Scorsese, he has that pull in Hollywood to be able to actually do that. Whereas I feel like most people in Hollywood studios just aren't going to bend to their will like that. But yeah, I don't know. I like long movies because mentally, I'm in my head, I'm like, this is going to be an epic, but you do have to earn it. You can't just be drawing on for 3.5 hours and I'm bored out of my mind, and the movie doesn't deserve it.
The movie's got to be good. I mean, look, Avengers Endgame is 3 hours and 3 minutes. I could watch that movie all
the time. Hell yeah.
You know, The Wolf of Wall Street, 3 hour movie.
Yep.
Again, doesn't feel like a 3 hour movie.
Scorsese.
The Irishman feels like a 3 hour movie to me. I'm engaged. I enjoy it, but it feels like a 3 hour movie to me. This is a historical, like, epic drama. And I feel like there's a lot of money tied into this, and studios want to make their money back on it. I think Christopher Nolan established himself enough to be able to go, I'm going to make a 3 hour movie. And people are like, dude, it's Christopher Nolan. I want to go tune in to see what he's going to do. And of course the whole Barbenheimer thing, absolutely, like, that those two almost kind of promoted each other this year. But again, Oppenheimer was a good movie. It felt like a 3-hour movie to me by the time I left the theater, but it was a good movie. I was engaged the whole time. So I think it really kind of comes down to like, yeah, they're 4 hour and 10 minutes. This kind of reminds me of like the Lord of the Rings and like those director releases, right? There's some of the stuff that you go, okay, I know why this was cut out. Like that absolutely did not require it to be in the movie. But then there's other things that you go, oh gosh, okay, this should have been in the theatrical cut. I think it's kind of a give and take. I think the directors, look, if you're very proud of the product that you put out, you're going to want every minute of it to be on screen. But then for casual viewers like ourselves, like we don't necessarily need to see, you know, a 3-minute take of Napoleon putting on his pants. Maybe it was moving to the director as he was filming it, but for the rest of us, it's like, you can cut that out. So I don't know. I'm curious. I will watch both. I love Ridley Scott. He's probably in my like top five favorite directors. And so I'd like to see what he does. Mm. It's funny that you mentioned that. I've not actually seen the director's cut of Kingdom of Heaven. And I saw Kingdom of Heaven in theaters. I remember leaving and being like, that movie was just fine.
Yeah. That's how I felt too. I felt the same way. Of every director's cut I've ever seen, it is by far the most drastic change I've had watching a movie. Like I've watched the final cut, Ridley Scott Blade Runner. And I prefer it over the theatrical also, but it's still kind of the same movie, just retooled a little bit. Kingdom of Heaven puts in complete storylines and motivations that the movie almost didn't make sense without. And, you know, we're talking about Batman v Superman. I thought the director's cut of that made the movie make more sense.
Yeah, it was much better.
Yeah, much better. So like, it just really comes to depends. When you take stuff out that literally is telling your story, then that's a problem. But if you're taking stuff out just because you can lose it, and it's just you don't need it, but it is cool, it's just a different way of having different director's cuts.
Well, full honesty, folks, there are no director's cut of the Extra Movie Butter podcast. You get it all because we appreciate you listening. But we are going to take a break. When we come back, our most recommended Halloween movies for you. Stay tuned.
Own the video that's perfect for Halloween and anytime you watch it.
Fantastic!
It's an instant classic for both kids and grown-ups.
Eureka!
Siskel and Ebert give it 2 thumbs up. Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, on sale now at a special low price.
What's the story?
It's funny.
It's a funny political thing.
It's a thriller, too.
It's a thriller.
And it's all at once.
In a town where people are dying to make it.
You're fired.
Good thinking, Lenny.
He'd kill for a box office hit.
Cut from the DA to an upmarket suburban neighborhood.
And now he's finding out.
You know anything about this? Who delivered it? Where it came from?
That making movies can be murder.
I asked you a direct question.
The Player.
Welcome back, folks. And now the segment that we certainly enjoy, and we hope you do too, it's the Extra Movie Butter portion. And this being the Halloween season, we figured we would start tossing in a little bit of our recommendations for what we think are the go-to Halloween movies. Now, before we go into that, I do have to give a quick little review about a movie that I was required to watch. I lost a bet. Benny's Bengals beat my Rams. But also, anytime I get a recommendation from both Benny and JTE, it's worth watching. So I did recently watch Cobweb. And by recently, I mean like Sunday night, I watched Cobweb.
Nice.
For the first time. And that's certainly a movie, man.
So here's what I'll say before you get into it. It is very stylized, and it is playing almost like, you ever see the Twilight Zone movie? Have you ever seen those? The one where, like, you know, it's like 3 separate stories.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The last one about the kid who has superpowers, everything feels elevated. It doesn't feel like he's just in, you know, he obviously isn't just in a normal everyday reality because he's creating his own reality. But there's certain shots in Cobweb and just the tone that feels like you're in a movie. You're not necessarily there to scare you, even though it does get creepy, but just a way, like there's one point where the kid is on the stairs and his parents' shadows are like huge and he's like in between them. When I saw the movie, I said to myself, all right, this is a director who's having fun, knows what he's doing, and is not playing it too serious. So what are your overall thoughts on the movie?
It did seem very animated.
Yes.
And that was actually like my favorite part of the movie was the visually how it looked. Like how the kid was perceiving the walls and how when he was locked in the basement, like the shadow kind of was covering him entirely. And you got the sense of like, that's how his sister, who, you know, spoiler alert, is looks like she was born a demon and the parents basically just kind of contained her into the walls. Yeah. And while she was in the wall, she basically embraced her being a demon and learned to crawl and learned to kind of act and like a spider. It was a little freaky when the bully and his cousin showed up.
Yeah.
And the sister just kind of butchers them. The ending felt really rushed though. Like once the sister was finally exposed, it was like, oh, she's been kind of forced back into containment. And then you blink and the movie is over and it's like, wait, what just happened? So I had to go back and like read Wikipedia and it was like, oh, he was adopted by the teacher. It's like, I didn't get that. Like, I just assumed that like the sister had him under her control the whole time. Like, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think visually I enjoyed it a lot. Like, there's no real big stars in this one. Lizzie Kaplan's kind of the biggest star in that. And then, Homelander from The Boys is the dad. And, I did enjoy it, but it is a kind of like, what the fuck did I just watch? Like by the end of that movie. The sister being just like this creepy spider demon villain. It's wild.
It's one of those movies where I was watching and I didn't know what was going to happen next. And I appreciate that. Like most horror movies, I'm 2-3 steps ahead of it. I know exactly what's going to happen. So it felt refreshing to watch a movie where every few minutes I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen next. I don't know where this movie is going to go. And the scene where he opens the door for the first time is one of the creepiest scenes of the year for me. Like I was like, what is behind this door? And all you see is the eyes. And I was just like, it was creeping me out. I was really into it.
Yeah. Visually, it's a lot of fun. Like, it's a good horror movie. And it's like a tight, like, hour, 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's short.
Yeah, it's super short. Like, would this air in theaters? Or was this like
It was in theaters in L.A., but it was like two showings a day. One at like 8 a.m., 9, 10 a.m. And there was one at like 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. Okay. So it was like very few theaters. I wanted to go see it in theaters. I just couldn't make it work because of the times it was playing. And within like 2 weeks, it was gone. Hmm. So I had to wait till the streaming to watch it.
Well, I dug it. I think it's a good horror recommendation, boys.
Benny, any last thoughts?
On Cobweb, I really enjoyed it. It did not play anywhere near me. Like I wanted to see it in theaters and I could not. But like I said, I was pleasantly surprised with the movie. I'm the same way. Like when he opens the little door in the wall, it's such a good scene. It reminds me a lot of like a modernized version of People Under the Stairs. I don't really know why, but I feel it's a lot like that movie.
Totally. Yeah.
And I just had a lot of fun with it. I think it's definitely worth checking out this Halloween.
Yeah.
I would throw that on as a recommendation. Now, I also would like you guys to give us, our listeners, some additional recommendations for some good Halloween movies. So, Benny, we got to lead it off with you. What obscure 80s horror movie property are you going to pitch us today?
So I'll give you a couple of good 80s ones that I think are fun, but I'm actually going to throw out a more modern movie.
Oh, okay.
It's called, and it's a pretty well-known movie. It's called The Descent. It's on HBO Max right now. If you've not seen The Descent, of any movie, I think in years, it does the best job of creating atmosphere. Like the creatures and the action in the movie, they are good. But what the movie does amazing is just giving you this creepy, claustrophobic feel to it that you just feel in your bones throughout the movie. And that is hard for a movie to do. Like, that's one of those movies, like, I was literally physically cringing while watching the movie a lot of the time. So if you have not watched The Descent, probably my favorite horror movie of the last decade, I encourage you strongly to check it out. Now, if we're going into my wheelhouse of the 1980s, there are so many horrible and stupid horror movies from the 80s. So I'll give you three, just kind of on a different continuum. One is, if you're just looking for like silly family-friendly horror, go with any of the Critters movies. They're basically man-eating teddy bears. You know, they're a good introduction. Like, if you have like preteens, you know, and you want to get them introduced to the horror movie genre without giving them nightmares, strongly encourage you to give the Critters franchise a go. And then I love the old 80s slashers movies. So I think they're ridiculous and they're absurd. Any of the first five Nightmare on Elm Streets, worth checking out. And my favorite dumb slasher movie of all time, Friday the 13th, Jason Takes Manhattan. One shot head into a trash can. One of my favorite kill in movie history. So give them a go. And unlike a flyer the night before last, like years ago, I had posted online looking for just horror movie recommendations. And a former Schmodown competitor, movie critic William Bibbiani, posted this 1988 movie in there called Brain Damage. And I'd always meant to go back and watch it. And I finally gave it a go the other night. And it is insane. And if you like just like really cheesy 80s, you know, pre-VFX effects, check it out. It is about a parasite that gives people euphoria in exchange for them taking him around to eat human brains. So the movie is just off the wall. The creature is insane looking. It's like if you remember the scene in Spaceballs where the chest burster pops out yep. and starts doing the dance.
Hello, my baby. Like, hello, my darling.
Yes. It's like a whole movie in that little mindset of that scene.
Okay.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah, I guess
DT, I'll go. How about you, buddy?
First of all, Descent is a great call. Great underappreciated horror film. Some of the scariest scenes in that movie have nothing to do with the actual danger. Like you said, some of the things they're just doing is horrifying. Anyway, Descent's awesome. All right, so I'll just say this because I've been saying it for the past like 10, 20 years. My go-to Halloween movie is always The Evil Dead 2, Dead by Dawn. It's just a classic, Sam Raimi. I just grew up with it. It's my go-to Halloween movie, but I'm not going to say too much about it because if you're listening to this and you don't know about Evil Dead 2 or don't love it, I don't know what to tell you. It's
Army
just,
of Darkness is better.
You're out of your mind. I love Army of Darkness. That's a comedy. There's actually horror elements in this movie. I want to give some under-the-radar films. I'm going to go with one of my favorite horror films of the past, let's say, 22 years. I'm not sure when it came out, early 2000s. I'd say this came out around 2004, maybe. It's a film directed by Bill Paxton, starring Matthew McConaughey and Bill Paxton.
Oh,
it's
Frailty.
Yes. Thank
good
you.
Round of applause
by Benny. Thank you. I love Frailty. Stephen King is a huge fan of the film, and he championed it hard when it came out. He was like trying to tell everybody to go for social media. He would just go on interviews and say, I love this movie. Bill Paxton is a really talented director. And I wish he had directed more films. He also directed the Disney golf movie with Shia LaBeouf called The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy that movie. I think it's a really good underappreciated film. But Frailty is one of those films, I don't want to give you too much details because it is one of those movies that when I saw it in theaters, I knew very little going in. And as the movie played out, I found it fascinating. The questions it was asking were dark and also fascinating. It's a very taut thriller with a very gothic vibe. I'll just give you the very basic plot. Bill Paxton has two kids, two sons. One's like around 12. The other one's around 8, around that age range. And McConaughey is playing one of those kids growing up, and he's telling a story of his father and how one day their mother passed away, so he's the only father. And then one day he comes home from work, sits his son down, at both his sons down at the dinner table, and says, God came to me at work today and told me I had to kill demons that are walking among us. And that, to me, was just a crazy... Imagine your dad coming home and saying, God talked to me today, and I have to go kill demons that are disguised as humans, and I need your help. And the movie just goes off from there, and I don't want to tell you anything more, but if that log line interests you, please go seek this movie out. I think it's an amazing film, and it has one of the best premises for a film that I've seen in a long time. So, Frailty, directed by Bill Paxton, starring Matthew McConaughey. Anything to say about it, Benny? Because I'm glad you know about it.
Oh, yeah, definitely check it out. It is a great movie, and it is a very – the story is excellent, but it takes you places you don't think that that story is going to take you, and it is a fun ride of a movie.
It is, man. It is very dark, too, though, and very – it's just one of those movies, just from reading the back of the DVD box, I'm like, I need to go watch this immediately. So that's an undercover film that I feel like – it's still brought up. People have seen it, but it is not a mainstream film that I feel is definitely overlooked. Also, speaking of slasher films, I was a huge fan of the remake of My Bloody Valentine that came out maybe about a decade ago. It's a film I went in with very low expectations. I was working in LA and they had a free screening, so I went and saw it for free. And it is like a Jason movie meets Scream. So if you like Scream and you like a slasher movie in the vein of like Friday the 13th, it takes those two movies and kind of mixes them together. It has great slasher moments, a lot of overuse of nudity and violence. But it also has that thing in Scream where you're trying to figure out who the killer is. And just like in Scream, I thought I had it figured out 3 or 4 times. And every time I was like, damn it. Remember when you first saw Scream and you're like, I know who the killer is. And then that person would die. They're like, okay, I think it's this person. Nope, they just died. It's like, wait, well, who the hell is the killer? So I think it's a very underrated horror film. It's a very fun horror movie. It doesn't take itself too seriously. Like I said, they really make use of the 3D. If you do have a 3D player, I have a 3D projector, so I am able to watch 3D movies at home. Definitely check out the 3D version. But I think if you can't find the 3D version or you don't have the 3D setup, it's still worth a watch just because of how interesting and fun the story and how gory and over the top nudity it is. It's just it is a callback to 80s horror films with a more modern take like Scream. So My Bloody Valentine remake 3D. All right, Moose, hit us.
Well, I got 5 recommendations for you guys.
Holy moly, let's hear it.
First and foremost, the greatest movie of all time, which is 1984's Ghostbusters.
Yes, it's a Halloween movie.
Second recommendation, it's the greatest sequel of all time, 1989's Ghostbusters 2.
Wow, that's a statement.
Number 3, 2016's Paul Feig's directed Ghostbusters.
Boo. That is a scary movie. That made me not want to go to theaters for a long time.
Number 4, 2021's Ghostbusters Afterlife, directed by Ivan Reitman's son, Jason Reitman.
Yes, yes. 2 of those are good.
But no, I look, anytime I get to pitch the Ghostbusters, I will. But honestly, one of the most like surprising horror movies came out not too long ago. Was Ready or Not.
Oh, yeah, fun movie.
With Samara Weaving. Man, I loved that movie. It was so much fun. It's a nice little like horror thriller. Has some like paranormal like... ramifications because the whole family's working basically kind of made a deal with the devil and you know they have to play this game every time one of their children is married, and they play this game, and if they play hide and seek, basically the family has to sacrifice the new bride or groom in the family. And unfortunately Samara Weaving's character pulls hide and seek out of the hat and they have to play it. So the family's basically hunting her throughout the movie. And at first she thinks it's a big joke, but then almost immediately, like, they're coming at her with guns and chainsaws and spears and crossbows. And it's just, it's a wild, crazy ride. And the ending is so freaking good. The last 5 minutes of that movie is incredible. So I very much enjoyed that movie. And I'm not, you know this, if listeners, if you've listened a bunch, you know I'm not the biggest horror movie fan. But man, I loved that movie so much. And the ending of that is my favorite of any horror movie I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's funny. Those guys went on to direct the last two Scream films. And I thought those last two Scream films were okay. But Ready or Not, I really enjoyed. So I would love to see them get off Scream and start making more original horror films like Ready or Not. Because that, to me, is by far the best film. And I will throw one more recommendation. If you like Ready or Not, but you want a more darker, serious, bloody version of it, I would check out Adam Wingard's Your Next. It's the film that he did before The Guest. Then he went on to do, you know, Godzilla vs. Kong. But his first film, Your Next, is a really violent, but at times fun film with a similar premise, but much smaller budget.
Okay.
And I'll throw out two more horror things. Here's the thing. Like, this is a horror movie when it came out, but over time it has not become a horror movie, and that's Jaws. Which yeah, I think, if you consider it a horror movie, I think it's easily the best horror movie ever made. It's not a good Halloween movie, but I still watch Jaws 2 to 3 times every year. Love that movie. It's in my top 10 of all time. And I've harped on this several times on our channel. If you've never seen the original Godzilla, the one from the 50s, the Japanese version, before it was like re-edited for America.
Orson Welles. Are you talking about Take Orson Welles Out?
Yeah, no, I'm talking the original Japanese okay. one. No Americans, no, all in Japanese. That movie, I know Godzilla has become like an action thing and a campy thing. That original movie is a horror movie. And it is a very intense movie with a lot of political undertones. I strongly encourage you to check it out. It is a masterpiece for its time.
Listen, folks, you got some good recommendations from obviously the people with the most insight in this business, your extra movie butter boys. Take it for what for what these are. They're solid recommendations, especially Ghostbusters franchise. Do yourself a treat. Well, we are going to take a quick break, get some news from our sponsors. Again, JTE has lined us up some amazing sponsors, as always, and so we're excited to hear from them. But next, Benny and JTE are going to give us their review of David Gordon Green's newest horror flick, The Exorcist Believer.
Let's go. Come on.
You're sightseeing with your family, and you're the picture of boredom.
Great shot, right here.
Oh, honey, we need a picture of all of us.
Dad, excuse me. Yes. Would you take a picture of us?
I'll just be over there.
When you take a time out, take a Twix with chewy caramel twice, milk chocolate twice, and that great cookie crunch twice. So take a time out times two.
Let me show you, let me show you.
Time out for Twix.
Where's Michelle?
He's an ice cube.
Two California teenagers have defrosted a million-year-old caveman. Now they're going to wash him, feed him, and teach him to be normal.
That's boring, dude.
Normal. We're going psycho with him, bro.
And Encino High is about to learn the truth.
He's a caveman.
Encino Man.
That's barbaric.
Rated PG. Now playing at a theater near you.
Welcome back, folks. Now, we can't talk The Exorcist Believer without first breaking down our thoughts on the original Exorcist. We talked about it briefly earlier about how this is possibly one of the best horror movies of all time. I mean, it was the first horror movie to be nominated for a Best Picture Academy Award. So we figured we'd give a quick little, you know, extra movie butter boys take on The Exorcist before Benny and JTE break down the newest in the franchise. So JTE, you watched this movie today.
Correct.
Okay. So it's fresh in your mind. I watched it within the last couple of weeks. Your thoughts on this movie?
I mean, yeah, it's a masterpiece. It's an amazing film. I said this in my Letterboxd review. It is a great film that just happens to be a horror movie. It's just so well shot, so well constructed. William Friedkin, who just passed away, he made three masterpieces, in my opinion. We mentioned this when we talked about his passing. Exorcist, Sorcerer, French Connection. Those three are just 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5, whatever you want to call it. Rewatching The Exorcist today, it just made me, it reminded me of how tall of an order any movie called Exorcist has coming out after the original film. Because nothing is going to live up, nothing is going to be as good as that original film. It's just not going to happen unless you get a director that talented. And I think a lot of people are also forgetting, like, it was not even Best Picture, but he pushed envelopes and showed people things that no one had ever really seen before. I don't think a lot of people really thought of exorcisms before The Exorcist came out. It wasn't something that was just part of modern day culture and something people talked about. But yeah, watching the film, what really sticks out to me is that first and foremost, it is about people. It is about people of different walks of life. And the exorcism and the thing with the girl, it happens, but it's not so much about what's happening to her, but how it affects everybody around her. And there are some parallels to that in this new film, but this is just done at the absolute best level it could be done. There's so many things that I just love about the film, just the pacing, the direction. There's a scene in the very opening of this film, The Exorcist, where he is in Iraq, and he's basically, it looks like a scene from Raiders of the Lost Ark. For this one scene, you have 100-something extras, all looking like they're working, looking for, you know, artifacts, and you just don't get that level of filmmaking today for just an establishing shot. It would be all CG. It'd be, you know, done in close-ups. I love watching older films and just seeing how much thought and how much resources they put into just the smallest of details. So I think it's a 5 out of 5 film. I think it's a masterpiece. Watching it again today, it just made me fell in love with it all over again. Definitely one of the best films. Not just horror films, just one of the best films I think ever made.
Benny, how about you? The Exorcist, the original.
I don't have the passion for it that JTE does. I like The Exorcist, and I think it's a very good horror movie. I came to The Exorcist very late in life. Like, I don't think I had ever seen it before my mid-30s. So The Exorcist is one of those movies, if you watch it as is, like, I try to just, when I review movies, I try to just do it based on my personal reaction without adding in context to it. It is a very good movie. I don't think it's perfect. I think there are some random things. And I think there are a lot of things done in the movie purely for shock value that over time, the shock value isn't there anymore just because our society has degraded or opened up, however you want to view it. They just don't have the impact that they would have had in 1970, whatever. I think if you view this movie in context of when it came out, and the social environment it came out, then you're looking at a movie that is like, oh shit, they did that. And it is like a 5 out of 5 movie. But coming to it as a 35-year-old who has seen movies that have already crossed the lines that it crossed and then 10 more after it, it loses some of the punch, but it's still an excellent horror movie. And you can't take that away. It's excellently made, it's excellently paced, and the performances are very good, especially. And I'll say this, Linda Blair is a kid actress in that movie. She gave an amazing performance, and she made you uncomfortable in that movie. That's probably, that is up there with one of the best child performances in the history of cinema. Because, like, that was, oh, I felt very uncomfortable in some of her scenes. Very good.
I will push back on one thing. I think there are still some things that are real shocking for today, where I'm like, did she just say that and do that? Oh my God. Even today, some of the things that she does in that movie, I think would make me a little like, wow, how'd they get away with that? But I can also understand where you're coming from. Sometimes it comes off a little comical because you're just like, okay, I see what's happening there. The effects maybe aren't the best. And it's almost like what she's doing is so out there that today it just seems kind of funny in times.
I saw this movie as a child. Now, this movie came out in 1973. This movie came out 10 years before I was born. So I saw this movie when I was in elementary school, and it horrified me, right? And then so many movies have come after it, to Benny's point, and so many movies have done so much of this, even like parodies, like there was the Leslie Nielsen
Repossessed.
Repossessed, you know, with him and Jesse Ventura singing Devil with a Blue Dress On, parodying this movie. So this movie horrified me as a child, but then so many of the tropes have been done so many times throughout the movies that when I revisited it as an adult recently, it's not scary to me anymore as much as it, as I'm looking at it now as like someone breaking down a director's work of art, right? And I can see how many movies like that I've seen throughout my lifetime that have taken pieces of this movie or taken the flair from this movie or even premises from this movie and done it differently, or almost in some cases, some of these possession movies that they come out with nowadays are almost like beat for beat on The Exorcist. And so it makes me appreciate movies that came after it, but it also certainly makes me appreciate where these movies all got their source from, and that's this movie here. So I appreciate it for what it is. I agree. I do consider it a bit of a masterpiece. It as not the biggest horror guy in the world, I can appreciate where so many other horror movies came from just based off of this one. And so if you're the person who breaks through that wall first, everything that comes afterwards is basically second tier compared to what your masterpiece was. So that I do consider it a masterpiece. It's still scary as shit for me. I agree. It's a little more, oh, wow, than it is scary. I know at the time this was, and I read up on this after having watched it. I know at the time, like, this was such a controversial movie. Like, the Roman Catholic Church came out and said, do not see this movie. And so, you know, listen, if you made a movie at that point in time that was both commercially successful and award successful, then you know that you've done something well. And just like Jaws, Benny, you pointed out like what a great horror movie that is. This is one of those horror movies that definitely stands the test of time. Yeah, some of it has aged out a little bit, and some of obviously the effects don't look as crisp as something that would be coming out nowadays, but for what they had during that time, it's a great flick, masterpiece. Sounds like maybe the sequel to this movie, which is now this movie that came out, directed by David Gordon Green, not quite as good. Now, full disclosure, I've not seen this movie, so I'm going to let Benny and JT really shoulder the burden of having to review this one. JT, you mentioned earlier that you had a lot to say about this. So without spoiling anything, lead us off with your initial thoughts.
Yeah, so my expectations were definitely low going into the film because it was in the 20s percentile on Rotten Tomatoes, and it was getting a pretty bad rap. But also knowing that David Gordon Green got a lot of crap for his last Halloween movie, Halloween Ends, and I was on team. I actually enjoyed that movie because it did something so different from the last two. Halloween Kills gave me all the Michael Myers slasher killing I needed. So when they went a totally different direction in part three, I was like, oh, good. I'm not going to just see Michael Myers carve people up for the next hour and a half in different ways. It was actually something different thematically, and I enjoyed it for that. Now, okay, I'm in a minority. A lot of people did not like that movie. So going into this film, I will say this. For the first hour or so, I was really into it. I was like, really into the mystery of, if you've seen the trailer, the girls go missing for 3 days and they come back and are possessed. It tells you that in the trailer. The father says, how long were you gone for? She's like, 3 hours. He's like, honey, you were gone for 3 days. And I thought that initial setup was really interesting and it had me intrigued in a lot of different ways. The more this movie gets into the actual exorcism, I think it gets kind of weaker and kind of falls apart in a lot of ways. But man, did I love the setup and some of the character motivations that they set up in the first half of the movie. Now, I live in LA and I have people and friends in the industry. And I have heard from friends, who know people, say that this movie was kind of chopped up in the edit bay. And I think I would say this is not the version David Gordon Green probably wants in theaters right now. I think there is definitely a director's cut out there that might be better, but I can't say for sure. Because I don't know what that cut looked like. Maybe Blumhouse is like, we need to fix this in post. And I heard it was a little bit of a rocky post-production for this movie. So I'm hoping maybe months, years from now, we'll hear a little bit more about that and have a better idea of what happened. But it does feel like this movie, as it builds momentum and gets to your third act, and when you're there for, like, I guess what you're really there for, the exorcism stuff, the movie doesn't quite live up to the buildup and the character motivations that it sets up in the first half. So I was really into the movie, and by the end, I didn't hate it. I was like, you know, it did fumble the ending. I thought, you know, we'll get into spoilers, but even though it didn't finish in a very satisfying way, there are some themes I introduced that I could see could play into the next film. Like, this is supposed to be a trilogy. According to Dave Gordon Green, they have this treatment for all three films. And there are some elements that are laid down here that I think could be carried over to the next film that I would kind of want to see played out. But at the end of the day, I'd rather just see one very satisfying film. And that's not quite what I got, but it was as bad as I thought it would be. I will say, after watching the original Exorcist, anytime you compare that masterpiece to a sequel that's just okay, it's going to hurt it a little bit. So I think you just got to... If this movie wasn't called Exorcist, and it was just an exorcism movie, I think it would have done much better in reviews, because I think people are bringing in this very high standard when they're going to the movie thinking this is a sequel to one of the best films of all time. And when it's just okay, people really digging in and hitting it hard. They're really punching down on it. And I feel like if this was just called the exorcism of the little girls or whatever, I think it would get fairly better reviews, but that's just my opinion. So that's my overall thoughts. Strong beginning, strong themes introduced, kind of fumbles the ending.
I don't think it would have gotten better reviews no matter what you called this thing, to be perfectly honest with you. So I keep track of the movies that I watch on Letterboxd. I rated this movie at a 1, and it is very rare that I rate movies at a 1 on that thing.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was not a fan of this movie on any level. I despise this movie. Wow. I wouldn't piss on this movie if it were on fire.
Wow.
Like, I am with JT. There's like 25 good minutes at the start, but after that, it is awful. I'll wait till we get into spoilers, where I give you my itemized list of how much I hate this movie and every aspect of it. But just so you know, I hate this movie.
So before we go into your guys' spoiler reviews, because I really, not having seen it, I wanted Benny to stretch this out. But I do have to ask this question. We kind of touched on it last week when talking with Saw. You guys touched on it when you were talking about Expendables. Franchise fatigue, right? And I just looked up The Exorcist. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This now being the 6th movie that is somehow all connected in a franchise together. This being a direct sequel to the original. However, there is The Exorcist 2, The Heretic, The Exorcist 3, Exorcist the Beginning in 2004. Dominion, which is the prequel to Exorcist. And yes, there is a slated sequel to this one and a third untitled Exorcist movie.
The thing is, Moose, nobody saw all those movies that you just mentioned except for The Exorcist. Like, nobody saw those sequels. So it really feels like there's not a lot of, you're not coming with a lot of baggage, because nobody, those movies left zero impact on pop culture, film geeks. They just came and went like a bad fart.
So that being said, like, does that tarnish the franchise in general? Does that tarnish the original? Because this movie's coming out basically banking on the good fortune of the original movie, right? Banking on that name. So does it tarnish this franchise with this many stinkers in it?
I'll tell you why. Because Jaws is still considered a masterpiece. Has the Jaws 2? It's okay. You can have some fun with it. Jaws 3 and 4 are god-awful. But in no way does those movies tarnish. Because when you think of Jaws, you think Spielberg. Spielberg and Jaws. When I think Exorcist, I think William Friedkin. None of those directors after Jaws 1 or The Exorcist are anywhere close to either of those directors. So they're just never seen in the same light. They are what they are. They're just sequels trying to grab money. And, you know, you hope for the great one. You hope for another great one. But I think The Exorcist and Jaws are just so good. They're not going to be tarnished by... You can have 10 horrible more Exorcist movies. They can come out with 5 more horrible Jaws movies. Those first movies are just so locked into that 70s time period of masterpieces. They can't be touched.
And I would say, like, The Exorcist and Jaws, they're self-contained stories. So yeah. You can watch them and the story ends. It's like if you go take The Matrix, for example, like the first Matrix movie, great. Mm-hmm. But then the story doesn't really end at the first one. And then if you watch the other three along with it, it degrades it.
Yes.
So like in that case, because since the story was ongoing, they do tarnish that original one. But these originals, they were locked in. They ended when they ended.
Mm. Well said.
Yep. Good point. Well, let's go into spoiler territory. Now, I want to kick off with Benny because it seems like JT, you can draw some good things from this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not passionate about it. I'm not going to sit here and defend it overly. Like, how dare you, sirs? It's an okay movie. So go ahead. I'm curious to hear what you really hated about it.
Okay. The last movie I rated as low as this movie was Shark Side of the Moon, okay? which was a straight to Tubi original made for $14.
Nice.
So this is the issue with this movie. One, at no point did I believe any of the adult actors were the parents of these children. They did not come off as parents at all. I did no belief in their emotional connection. You can tell that Ellen Burstyn has been I at least hope she has been retired from acting for a while, because she was like a zombie, like reading a teleprompter in this movie. And on top of that, the entire premise of like a possession movie like this is you're leading up to a spiritual battle between whatever the entity is and whatever magic rite or spiritual rite that you're leading up to. It doesn't even matter the religion. You could interchange the religions. It doesn't have to be Catholic. And in this movie, they build up like this weird ecumenical potluck dinner that doesn't seem to make any sense. There's never an explanation of why they're doing it, how it's going to work, why it's going to work. And then in the end, they pull like a Sphere. I don't know if you guys remember the movie Sphere, which has the worst ending in major Hollywood history, which is just, we're just going to hold hands and say it's done.
Next contact.
Yeah, they get to the movie. There's no real exorcism. It's just the dad is like, you know, I don't want you to be possessed. And then it's over. It's it.
You're shortchanging it. I mean, there's so much more to it than that. Here's what I'll say. The movie is called Exorcist Believer because Leslie Odom Jr. does not believe in heaven or hell. He does not believe in God. He is not a religious person in any way. And I think what's interesting is when the two girls go missing, the family of the other daughter is very religious, goes to church every Sunday. And they're the ones who bring up the exorcism. Like, listen, it might not be a sickness. It might not be mental, because they literally put the girls in a mental hospital. And the real theme of the movie is somebody who does not believe in exorcism or God or heaven and hell, and a family who does believe it. And that person to a point where he can no longer deny what is happening in the movie and what is happening to his daughter, that he kind of has to become a believer. There's even a scene where the exorcist, his daughter, who is possessed by the devil, literally says to him, "Non-believer, you are not a believer. Like, this exorcism is not going to work because you don't believe." Like, so there's some interesting things there, I think, as far as thematically. So the beginning of the movie, you know, they go missing. And let's go real quick to the very, very beginning of the movie. The original Exorcist opens up in Iraq, and you're there with Max von Sydow. And, you know, it's almost like a prologue. This movie opens with Leslie Odom Jr. and his wife. They're in Haiti. She's like 8 months pregnant. He's a photographer. They're going around. The earthquake happens in Haiti. He's outside taking photos. She gets stuck in the rubble and is basically almost killed. The doctor takes her to the hospital, but because of the earthquake, they don't have electricity. And they basically say to Leslie Odom Jr., "We could either save the kid or we could save your wife." And to me, that's a very interesting choice that he has to make. But they don't tell you what choice he made. They do not tell you, but then it cuts about 13 years later. He's a single father with his daughter, and you come to the point where you're like, oh, okay. He chose to save the kid because the daughter is there. Now, what this movie does at the very end of the film, which I thought was a very interesting and kind of a cool reveal, was that while the very last 5-10 minutes of the movie, when the exorcism is kind of like going off, it's going off at this point, they are in full-on exorcism mode. The daughter says to him, "You chose the mother."
Mm.
And I thought that was a great reveal of the movie, because the whole movie, you just assume that he had picked the kid to survive and not the mother, because the kid is there. But no, he said to, they show a flashback. He tells the doctor, "Save my wife, let the baby die." But in the process, they're able to only save the baby, and he loses his wife. And for that reveal to happen, he is told that by the devil, who is his daughter, I was like, that whole thing. And then it kind of put some things earlier in the film into place, as far as like the way he was acting, the way you say, Benny, how like he didn't seem like a great father, a great connection, because I think deep down he knows like he misses his wife, he chose his wife, and yet he's stuck here with his daughter. Now, he loves his daughter, there's no doubt about that, but I think there is that under settlement of like, God, I wish my wife survives and not this kid, which is really dark and a really upsetting thing to think about. But once that reveal happens at the end of the movie, it kind of laid down some of the context of the film before that. Again, there are a lot of problems with this movie that Benny is going to get into in a few minutes, but there's enough there and interesting things that I was like, this is not a total wash. There are some cool things. In the beginning, like the first hour, it takes almost an hour for the actual demonic stuff to start happening. Like these kids go missing, and it felt like that movie Prisoners with Jake Gyllenhaal and Hugh Jackman. Have you guys ever seen that film?
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like that. Like two families are trying to look for their missing kid. And when the kids show up and they start acting differently, and there are flashbacks to what happened to these kids, and the way David Gordon Green displayed evil in this movie, and the original actor says it's a flash of a face of a girl in like makeup, and it's like really quick. They do it several times throughout the original Exorcist. This is a much more demonic, disturbing, kind of reminded me a little bit of Talk to Me, which came out earlier this year, another possession film. Some of the demonic imagery to me in this movie, I thought was pretty rad looking and pretty horrifying, even though it was just a glimpse. And the last thing I'll say before I go back to Benny is the whole potluck thing at the end. In the original, you just got the Catholic priest. They come in. We're here to do exorcism. This one, they bring in like a lady who's like into healing and voodoo. Like she's like from, I'm not sure what religion she was, but it was something that was much more spiritual. They bring in Ann Dowd, who almost became a nun, but then had an abortion. We find out in the movie that she left becoming a nun because of this. So there's like a redemption angle for her. And then there's the basic priest from the Catholic Church, then this family who goes to a different church, like Baptist or something. And the fact that they all kind of team up at the end, so it's not just like the Catholic, like in the original film, I thought was like, it made sense because Leslie Odom Jr. is not somebody who believes in any religion. So therefore, to see all these different religions come together and try to work together to help these two kids, I thought was an interesting angle also. So like I said, this movie has some good ideas and has some cool stuff. Just doesn't all come together.
Hang on. We get a theological Avengers Assemble moment in this movie.
You got it, buddy.
Fair enough.
Go ahead, Benny. I spilled out a lot there.
No, it's okay. So here's the thing. Like, I saw no undertones in the way that the relationship was played with the dude's daughter. Like, to me, it felt like someone that had just met their Uber driver and asked them if they wanted to be roommates. Like, that's the level of connection that I felt between the two. Like when that's revealed at the end, like even when the other guy who, you know, they wanted to be the villain, even though they literally gave him 12 seconds of screen time during the movie, chooses his daughter to live instead of the other one, which gets his daughter killed. I don't give a fuck. He's been on screen for 12 seconds. It's like literally like there's no connection between any of these people. I don't care what happens to any of you people. And it's not like
here's what I'll say about that. First of all, it's more about Leslie Odom Jr. The other family is there, obviously. But the ending, I do think that's a really interesting choice. So after you find out the reveal that she's like, you didn't choose me, you chose your wife. The devil basically says to this whole family, both Leslie Odom Jr. is there with his daughter and the parents of the other girl. They're like, they basically give him a ultimatum. You get to keep one of you, these kids. One's going to go to hell. One I'm going to let live. And the devil basically tells these two sets of parents, you pick. Just say you want your daughter to live, and that's the one that will live. The other one goes to hell with me. And both parents, the mother and Leslie Odom Jr., look at each other and agree to each other. They say, we will not choose. And it's almost a face-off, because if either one of those parents would say the other kid's name, the devil basically is like, I will let that kid live, and the other kid will die. And the husband, who is not at this point, is so disturbed by what's going on, has to like go outside the room. These kids are like in serious pain and torture. These demons are going to town on them. And probably at the height of the exorcism, the father, in a moment of weakness, just says, I want my daughter to live. He did the one thing that Leslie Odom Jr. and the mother said they wouldn't do, was pick a kid. But the great thing about that is the devil then does the opposite. The one father who said, I want my daughter to live, she dies, and the other kid lives. Basically, you can't trust the devil. The devil's going to literally do the most messed up thing you can think of. And that's exactly what he does. He goes, let my daughter live. And the second that choice is made, the devil takes his daughter and lets the other daughter go.
And so
I thought that was fascinating.
It could have been an interesting premise, but like the performance ruins it. Like when the man playing the dad runs in there, he literally yells at, like he's in a Pokemon movie. He literally yells out, Christina, I choose you.
No,
like he's throwing her out there to battle Pikachu, well, man.
This is, I think you and I are remembering it differently. Because the way I remember happening is he's not even in the room. He's curled up in a ball on the floor because he can't handle seeing his daughter going through what she's going through. And he just yells it out from like behind, almost in another room. He yells it out from another room. He's like, not even in the same room with his daughter. He just is on the ground and he can't take it anymore. And he just cries out, I choose my daughter. And he yells it because he's in a separate room. If he walked into the room and said, I choose my daughter, I agree. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but if I remember correctly, he's on the ground to the point where he's just withering in pain because he can't stand what's happening to his baby girl. And even though they made basically a pact not to pick either girl, it's getting so extreme. This exorcism is putting such a toll on his kid that he just yells it out of desperation.
Well, now he runs in there because his wife turns around, looks at him, sees the Pokeball and goes, Jim, or whatever his name was. No.
Yeah. I saw it Saturday. So I just remember it differently than you. I'd have to go see it again.
No, God, don't do that on my account, Jason. it's not a good movie, even if you're right.
It's going to stream. I think it starts streaming October 24th on, Paramount Plus or Peacock or whatever Universal one is. I think it's Peacock. So I will watch it again just because I just rewatched the original. And like I said, there's good stuff in there. To me, the movie fails in a lot of ways, especially towards the end. But there's enough thing in there for me to be like, okay, that's interesting.
Like, I think there's a couple of interesting like twists and turns as far as what the setup is for the exorcism. I just think there's no, the performance has never got you to buy into anyone. And then I don't know, like, I don't care what religion they pick to do this ceremony, but like the whole ecumenical thing, it just seemed like, you know, we're going downtown and we're finding any religious person that didn't have something to do that day or that couldn't get employed doing something else. And we're going to bring him over to the house and figure this out. So I don't know. It just seemed like a mishmash. And like, I would say there are five people involved in the exorcism.
Yeah.
Three of them are essentially never in the movie for more than a minute. So you have no interest in them. I mean,
I think Ann Dowd is really the one who you're supposed to kind of attach to in that scene. But here's the thing. Leslie Odom Jr. is not somebody who believes in religion. If I don't believe in a specific religion and we're doing exorcism, I want to load the deck. Give me every religion you got. I don't care what you're, what religion you are. If you have any sort of spiritual or religious power, bring it on, because I'm just here to save my daughter, because I don't believe in any of you. So whatever one works, let's combine them all in a nice potluck and see who can get this damn demon out of my kid.
And that would have been fine, but like even during the movie, okay, you get to this thing where he's supposed to be a non-believer, and that's supposed to be the crux of it. Through the entire movie, there's only one mention up until the final 10 minutes that he ever had an issue with God or rejected it. Like when Andoud comes to his house with the book, he has like a little 30-second speech about why he's mad at God. Yeah. Other than that, there's no mention of it. So that he's an unbeliever or has a problem with religion, it's never established at all leading up into this.
I don't think it's so much he has a problem with religion. I think he just doesn't believe in religion. So anytime anybody brings up religion in the movie, he's like, dude, you're wasting your time. I don't believe in all this stuff. Like, and Dowd shows him like a book and is like, hey, you know, you should read it. He's like, get out of here with this. Like, the only reason he actually starts to like... And here's why I will agree with you, Benny. I think, you know, the original actress from The Exorcist, Ellen Burstyn, is that her name?
Burstyn.
She's wasted in this movie. She is there for, she's in and out. You could have cut her out of this whole movie, and I don't think it would have changed a damn thing. Like, it might have been a stronger movie if you didn't bring her back, to be honest with you. But she's in it so little that it doesn't affect the movie too much for me. So, and I think more the very end of the movie, she kind of shows up with, and to me that was even more like, I don't care about this. Like, it just didn't work for me. So she's there, I agree, you know, she's not doing great acting, she's 80 something years old, she's okay, she's fine, she's just there to remind people that hey, the original Exorcist has happened, this is a legacy film. It's not like Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween. Like, she is, it's more like Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween Kills, because Jamie Lee Curtis spends that whole movie in a hospital bed basically out of the picture. This was closer to that than it is to Halloween Ends or Halloween 2018, whatever it's called. So I agree with you, Benny, on her. Like, I think all that's garbage. But what you're saying is just like, again, the movie is called Exorcist Believer. I don't think you have to show that he doesn't believe. You don't have to show like he hates God or he hates religion. He's just not, you know, a lot of people aren't like that. They just don't believe in that stuff because they're realist or agnostic or, you know, atheist. It wasn't a point of the movie, but it gets to the
point. It's literally the title of the movie. It's supposed to be the point.
It is. Well, it is. I think it is. As the movie goes along, it becomes more about that. I mean, the first time he believes anything is because he reads the book from the original Exorcist, and remember her stomach in the original says, help me. He sees that same message in his daughter while she's in the hospital, and those two things are enough for him to be like, wait a minute, I have photograph of what happened to her daughter, and this is happening to my daughter. So that's why he goes to her and asks for help and yada yada yada. But
at any point in the movie, knowing that this is the same guy who gave us Halloween Kills, did all of the priests that were assembled from all the different religions, they all start screaming out, evil dies tonight?
I wish. Here's what I'll say. I was worried about this because he injected, I think, too much humor in those Halloween films at times. And he did not do that with this film. And that's what I was worried about, because I like Halloween. I like Halloween Kills is okay. Halloween Ends is interesting. But he puts in some weird comedic moments throughout that Halloween film. This one, he did not do that. He really felt like he was playing it serious and wasn't trying to bring any sort of sense of humor and out of place comedy, I guess you would say. So I did enjoy that he didn't do that with this film. So that's one positive thing I can say.
And I'll say, like, and me and JTE clearly just are on different sides of this movie. Like, where he was talking, he appreciated some of the imagery in this movie. Like, there was some cool stuff, like when they were first looking for the kids, they go down into like this swampy little pit.
Yeah.
There was potential for like some really creepy atmosphere and things down there, and then they just abandon that like chumps and make this shitty movie. But like
they go back to it later, which I thought was cool.
the makeup they used on these kids, when we're talking about like Ghostbusters 2, like, do you know when like Viggo the Carpathian, they put the prosthetics on him?
And he looks like a
simian creature with this big head.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what the possessed demons look like. They look ridiculous. Like, they look like something out of, that should be in an 80s horror comedy. And then there's no levity. So it just doesn't, it just, I don't know. It just did not work for me. The appearance, it wasn't frightening. It wasn't menacing. It was just dumb.
And this is where I'll agree with Betty a little bit here. One of the biggest issues with this movie is the exorcism stuff is some of the least interesting things in a movie. I like the themes that happen and some of the twists. I told you about the father and some of the reveals, but the actual girls being possessed at times didn't really work. The makeup did look over the top at times. There was nothing that was came close to being shocking as some of the stuff that Reagan does in the original Exorcist. So, like, I liked more about the things that are happening around the girls than I did actually about the girls who are possessed, which I think is a problem when your movie's called The Exorcist. I think you need to be a little more invested in what's going on with the actual exorcism of these girls. And to me, that's where a lot of the movie kind of falls apart. But at the same time, I like some of the ideas and twists and turns that he does with the characters surrounding the girls. So, again, very mixed bag. But unfortunately, one of the weakest parts of this movie is the actual exorcism. And that's a problem if your movie's called Exorcist.
Yeah, like if you ignore anything that has to do with exorcism, demonic possession, or anything after the first 15 or 20 minutes, this is a great movie.
Was John Constantine one of the holy exorcism folk that arrived, or no?
That could have saved this.
Okay, because I was just going to say, there's your franchise right there.
It gets close to some John Constantine level shit in there, though. He would not have been out of place if he was there.
I would have settled for like Shia LaBeouf's little cab driver guy showing up. That's where I was with this movie, man.
Chaz Kramer, baby. Well, you guys are definitely kind of on different opinions regarding the movie, but let me ask you this. Go ahead, JT. Sorry.
The thing is, it sounds like I love this movie, and I don't. I think it's okay. Benny is so strong on the negative that I got to give it some props. Be like, it's not that bad. It's okay. But I don't like love. I'm not like, oh my God, go see this movie. But I think it's way better than the reviews and the harsh review that Benny is giving it. I think it's definitely better than that.
This is a vasectomy that makes you more potent. That's what this is.
Got it.
So my question is this, guys. Like, obviously, Blumhouse and Universal spent a lot of money to be able to gain the rights to be able to make this potential trilogy. This movie doesn't sound like it's off to a great start. Do you see some sort of a redemptive arc? Like, is the second one going to pick up any steam, or is at this point they're just going to try to get whatever money they can out of this franchise to try to recoup some of their $400 million losses into this investment?
Go ahead, Betty.
No, if they have it for long enough, I don't know what like the duration of the rights, or if they just own them outright. I'm sure 20 years from now, they could make enough Exorcist movies, enough Exorcist straight to streaming movies that somehow they could earn their movie money back. This movie is not like the next one of these will make less than this one did. And, it's like if you look at like David Gordon Green's like Halloween movies, they go on a downward arc. Like each movie is cut in half. Like whether or not you think he makes good movies, generally people don't respond to them where they want to go out and watch the next one that he makes. This movie started off, and it's probably going to end up making around $70 million worldwide. The next one will be lucky to make half of that. They are not going to make money off of this trilogy. It's going to be like a long grinding out nickels thing if they're ever going to recoup their money.
Yeah. First of all, they paid so much money for it. I don't know how they're making their money back.
Yeah, they got maybe screwed on that deal.
Once VOD and merchandise sales and all that, they'll eventually get there. Here's the thing. I will, if there's playing a second film, right? After watching this movie, I don't think these characters will be the center of the next movie. I think it'll be named Exorcist. It'll be named something else, you know, Exorcist, you know, who knows? Won't be Believer. It'll be like some weird other name. And I think it'll be a different person being, you know, that has to be exercised. I think there'll be some loose connections between the three films. And I think those connections will be more on the devil side than it will be with the actual characters from this movie. Like, I don't expect Leslie Olsen Jr. and his daughter to be in the next film and like 10 years later. I think they're just going to explore different exorcisms, but they all take place in this world of the Exorcist. And maybe one of these side characters might show up in the next film, but that's how, I don't know this at all. Like, this is just me, how I see it after watching this movie. And if I was going to go forward to making an Exorcist film, I would make it almost, while it's in the same universe, it's a different story, maybe on a different side of the world in London or something, but there are things that connect it to this film and the original. That's how I'd go about it, and I would go see it because I like this movie enough.
Fair enough. Well, folks, we are going to wrap up. We very much appreciate you guys tuning in. You've got some better Halloween movie recommendations that we gave you in our second segment than obviously our extra movie butter boys are going to give you for this particular stinker.
Moose, are you, after hearing what we talked about, are you at all interested in watching this movie?
A little bit, because there is a bit of a divide in opinions between you guys.
Yeah.
So yeah, I read the Wikipedia synopsis on this, so I'm going to go into this movie knowing what happens. And obviously, hearing your guys' review, there's nothing that really that's going to spoil it. So I would like to watch it just to be able to try to almost pick an opinion and pick a side in this argument.
You could be between me, like, he hated it, I thought it was okay. You could be like, I'm in the middle.
I'm going to wait till it streams. I'm definitely not going to pay some money to go see this in theaters.
2 weeks. It'll be on streaming in 2 weeks.
Perfect. 2 weeks. The sign of a good movie, how quickly it gets out of theaters. Well, we will see you next week. And what is our movie for next week, guys?
I don't think we're going to do Taylor Swift.
No, hard pass.
Oh. So
maybe we'll do a special theme episode and stay tuned. We'll figure it out.
Well, stay tuned, folks. You can always rely on us to be here every Tuesday or Wednesday morning, depending on when the Extra Movie Butter Boys can get together. But on behalf of myself, on behalf of Benny, and on behalf of JTE, we want to wish you guys good night and happy Halloween.